Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
As a content warning, we'll be answering a listener letter that contains discussion of sexual abuse. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, June 22nd, the To Tell or Not to Tell edition. I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding parenting column, and mom to Naima, who's 10, and we live in Los Angeles.
I'm Zach Rosen. I make another show. It's called The Best Advice Show. And I am dad to Noah, who's 5, and Ami, who's 2. We live in Detroit, Michigan.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom of 3 littles, Henry, who's 11, Oliver, who's 9, and Teddy, who's 6. We live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Today on the show, we have a serious but important question. Our letter writer experienced sexual abuse as a child. Now her daughter is the same age she was when the abuse started, and it's been hard to handle. She's wondering if she should tell her kids why she's been struggling. We're also going to touch base on our week in parenting, and if you're sticking around for Slate Plus, we'll be discussing the New York Times dad canon. Here's what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
Zach, did you feel like you were looking at a, make your Amazon wish list right now?
Yeah, I did. This piece really had my number in a lot of ways, not in all ways. I really like the idea of the dad canon and thinking about how the millennial dad canon is different from our parents' dad canon. And when we're talking about dad canon here, like the author talks about like the riding lawnmower, the dad, wielding his grill tongs, padding around the deck in his tapioca colored apron, the dad that's like really good at fixing things. That's kind of like dad canon from another era in some ways. And so what he was trying to identify are the things now.
As a Slate Plus member, you'll get a whole bonus segment every week and all your favorite Slate podcasts ad-free. It's truly the best way to listen and the best way to support the show. You can sign up for Slate Plus now at slate.com/momanddadplus. All right, we're going to jump into triumphs and fails as soon as we get back from this short break.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
So Zach, tell us, what have you been up to this week?
It has been a travel week to remember. We're in Tel Aviv now. My wife, Shira, and our 2 kids and I for a summer vacation. My wife's family is from here. I have family here. We have friends here. And we arrived here on Sunday after an epic 24-hour day of travel. So we found a really good rate out of Chicago. And so we drove to Chicago, which is about 4.5 hours. on the way to Chicago in our family van, Ami, who is prone to some motion sickness, he threw up not once, not twice, but three times. So we stopped at like two gas stations and gave him a gas station bath. And then we ended up at Shira's aunt's house in Chicago and gave him a shower there. And I was really worried that he was sick, but I think it was just motion sickness. So off to a great start there. And then we boarded our plane in Chicago. It was 9 p.m. after having left Detroit at like 9 a.m. earlier that day, and embarked on a 12-hour flight. And we survived. We made it. We slept.
It was direct.
It was direct. Yeah, that's why we found a good rate. Direct to Tel Aviv from Chicago. So we jumped on it. And Ami did throw up once, but I did catch it, which was a good moment, because changing throw up clothes on an airplane sucks. We've been there. And the kids watched a lot of movies, slept a little bit. And we got here, left Chicago at 9 p.m. on a Saturday, arrived in Tel Aviv at 5 p.m. on Sunday. And what day is it now? It's Tuesday now. The last few nights have been rough. Like, the kids went to sleep at like 9 or 10 p.m., but then Noah, two nights in a row, was up at 2 a.m. just ready for the day. Yeah. Which is just, it sucks. But we've made it through. She's done two nights. And I think, I'm hoping that tonight we will get a full night's sleep. But it's been dreamy. We were at the beach today. This is on the Mediterranean. And we're having a great day. And we're building sandcastles, just the four of us. And we walk over to our beach chair. And there's these group of, like, I don't know, like eight young kids, eight boys. They're probably like 16 years old or so. And Shira says to Ami, like, hey, do you want a snack, baby? And then we hear one of these kids in this group of 16 year old boys like, oh, you want a snack, baby, like just mocking us. And I turned around and I was just like, who's fucking with my family? And like some primal thing kicked in, and I'm not really thinking like these are 16 year old boys, but I just turn around. I'm like, you guys are really cool. and then Noah was confused. Like, Shira and I definitely felt like we were being bullied. Like, we were, you know, that age again. And it was this weird thing where it's like, these little shitheads, just being teenagers. But Noah was like, what's going on? And we were like, we think they're making fun of us. And she says, I think their parents have failed them.
Nice.
Just like, where did you even learn that idea of parents failing children? I asked her later. I'm like, where did you get that concept of these kids' parents having failed them? She's like, it's just something I thought of. So those are notes from the trip so far. There hasn't been any more throw up since we arrived, and we're having a great time.
For what it's worth, the New Camp family doesn't take a trip unless someone throws up. Like, like if it doesn't happen early in the trip, I live in fear for the moment it will happen. Because I actually, Jeff can correct me, but I do not believe we have ever like left home for at least one night, right? So day trips, no problem, where someone has not thrown up.
The record's intact over here too.
So you know, that's just gonna be your thing.
Yeah
we've tried everything. We have tried bands, we have tried nope. Nothing. If we medicate or band one child, the other child throws up. So
of course.
It's fine. I like that Noah's comment was like the ultimate comeback anyway, like really put things in perspective.
What about you, Elizabeth? What's going on this week?
Okay, well, we have had, you know, a triumph, but then I'm in that phase of the move where you are like, why are we doing this again? Mm-hmm. And just like everything with the kids feels like a fail, right? Because just all of the stability we typically provide is gone. Luckily, my parents had flown out here to help us, but Henry had to spend the nights like last week, which we don't really do. He has done them with Michaela's kids, but that feels like other family, you know, like they'll stay over there. Those kind of just happen spur of the moment. I'm super weird about spend the nights for a number of reasons. We've talked about that on the show, but One of the moms is a listener of the show. She is also like, doesn't do a lot of spend the nights, but sent me like perhaps the best invitation to a spend the night, which is like, hey, this is a gift I really want to give the kids. She's another military spouse, knows we're leaving. You know, I think they'd really enjoy this. They were going to camp together, and then was like, I have no guns in the house. These are the only people who are, you know, here. My husband is gone. We know him. My husband is gone. There will be no other visitors coming over. This is like the plan. Like this text of just, you know, she's like, if you have any other questions, let me know. So that instantly made me feel, you know, like, okay, this is good. I mean, I sort of thought they're another homeschooling family that we spend a lot of time with. So I knew them, but sort of taking that step to spend the night. Henry went, had a wonderful time. They didn't stay up too late. Like all of these things that I worry about. The mom texted me after he took his medication because he has these medications he has to take. And that's kind of a big hurdle for me too, is letting go of that control. It was just so lovely. And then a second spend the night was kind of a similar family that he had gone to school in the woods with. Same thing, mom. I had to ask her a bunch of the questions, but was totally upfront, not weirded out by it at all. And when I went to drop him off, did this wonderful thing that I want to kind of adopt, which was like in front of me, said to Henry, if at any time you change your mind and want to go home or feel uncomfortable, we have a house phone here and she had written my number, or you can use my phone and it's here and you can call your mom anytime, even in the middle of the night, I want you to know that you can call and go home. And I just thought that was such a lovely, like no one is going to try to force you into staying. You don't have to tell me why you want to go home. You don't have to tell anyone. But it really opened, I think it made him feel so much more comfortable to know, like, because we talk a lot about, like, you know, getting out of situations, even if you just feel you don't feel right and that's okay. I don't know. So just like, good job to these other lovely moms who posted my kid and also gave him, like, he got to do something fun instead of being here as we take everything off the walls and just like toys are disappearing and all of these kind of terrible things. I, of course, feel bad because now I feel like we have these two relationships where he can do this and we're leaving. And it will be a long time before like we build that kind of trust and feel safe, you know, in that same way again. But overall, I feel like we gave him this nice time and hit this hurdle, which is this spend the night with someone who is not like so intertwined in our family that it feels like nothing. And he did great and got, you know, wonderful reports about behavior and the things that they chose to do when kind of left alone, you know, later at night. I don't know. So that was nice.
That's really such a perceptive gift to give to you at this moment.
Mm-hmm. I know. Good job to these other moms too. I feel so lucky to have people in my life that I don't feel awkward kind of setting the, you know, my boundaries with and helping me along that path too.
What's going on with you, Jamila?
So I have this habit of sleeping on the couch. I put Naima to bed in her bed. I usually lay with her for a while, you know, until she falls asleep. And then I go out into the living room to crash to some television, usually something kind of mindless that I can just fall asleep to. And I just sleep out there, you know. I don't know why I don't want to sleep in my bedroom. I can't understand it. I can't explain it. I mean, sometimes like I'll get up late at night and go into my bedroom, or if it's like a Saturday and I'm sleeping in, I may get up like Saturday morning and come get in my bed and sleep there for a few more hours. But for whatever reason, I just sleep on the couch. And so a couple of these last nights that Naima's been here, she has wanted to sleep on the couch too. And like, what happens is that we're watching TV and she, you know, brushes her teeth and puts on her pajamas. And then like, it's impossible to wake her up. You know, like, I can't get off the couch, mommy. I'm too tired. So I'm trying to physically, like, lift her to standing, you know. And so I've just given in. And, like, we've been sleeping on the couch. And I know this is crazy. It can't be good for anybody's back. You know, like, our couch is long, but it's not, like, it's really enough space for us. But I mean, I guess there is enough space for us both on there. But I just don't know, like, what am I doing? Like, why is she sleeping on the couch with me?
Are you both sleeping well?
Yeah.
She's sleeping better than me. I'm struggling to fall asleep, but I think that's just generally an issue that I have.
How many nights a week are we talking? Are you on the couch?
I'm on the couch pretty much every night. And the couch is much less comfortable with Naima there. Like, she ends up taking the big part of it, and I'm kind of like in the corner, you know, all curled up.
Do you want to change or no?
I kind of want it back to myself so I can really relax.
Okay, so maybe you need to make it really uncomfortable for her so that she willingly goes back to bed. This is the passive aggressive response.
Make the TV really loud, maybe, and like something
or
that
like can you inch kind of your feet, you know, so it's less comfortable for her? Princess and the Pea, you know, put something under her couch cushions.
Maybe. That's maybe. It. Put some peas down there. I mean, what would happen if you're like, I'm sorry, honey, I love you, but couch is mama's spot?
I don't know. Naima doesn't take well to not sharing. Everything that's mine is hers. Everything that's hers is hers. But I think what I will just have to do is catch her before she gets sleepy enough and put her in the bed.
Do you think the draw is more like it's what you do, and what you do, as much as she probably doesn't
admit
it anymore,
is
cool, right?
I think it might be that she wants to be with me.
Yeah. So what if you move for that time and she moved with you, then maybe you'd have the couch back.
Maybe.
This it's funny.
You have to run some experiments.
I mean, it's not funny for you, but it's kind of funny.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to take another quick break. See you back here for our listener question.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
We're back. Let's hear today's listener question. As a reminder, this letter writer is talking about sexual assault and PTSD. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, Mom and Dad are fighting. This question is difficult to ask, even in writing, but I feel like I can't navigate this on my own, so I would appreciate your thoughts. I was sexually abused by a relative as a child and suffer from PTSD. A few months ago, my daughter reached the age that I was when the abuse began, and as a result, the symptoms have worsened. And while I'm in therapy and I'm receiving the support that I need, it's become increasingly difficult to manage my feelings around my kids. I find myself sometimes losing my temper with them over the smallest things, crying with no apparent reason, and sometimes too tired to play with them when they want to spend time with me after school, and I have a difficult time staying engaged when they talk to me. My daughter is 6 and my son is 10, and while they haven't explicitly asked what is going on with me, I feel I need to give some explanation as to why I'm having a harder time being the mom they deserve while I deal with this trigger. On the other hand, I'm afraid to burden them too much with my pain and don't want to make them think the world is a scary and dangerous place. Would greatly appreciate any advice on how to approach this topic in an age-appropriate way. Thanks, hiding my story. Wow. Okay, Elizabeth, what do you think?
Oh, gosh. Well, first, like, kudos to you for really thinking about these things and you know, being in therapy, writing to us, hopefully talking to friends about this, because I think that is such a big step. I think that this is something that you should specifically talk to your therapist about in the context of coming up with a plan about how you want to address this with your children. And because I don't think this should be something that you just decide to do. I think this has to be something that you consider, like, are you emotionally ready to do this, right? You're feeling pressured to do this because your behavior has changed and you feel like you owe them some kind of explanation, which I think is like a very normal thing. Like, I want them to understand that it's not about them, it's about me. But like, are you emotionally ready to open this with your children? Are you doing it because it's in their best interest and will serve them, or because you are trying to alleviate something of your own? I think those are things to consider. I think then you can come up with a plan, not only about what you would say, but I believe that when you do this, at whatever point you decide to do this, now or later, there are going to be triggers associated with talking about it. And you need to know what your coping plan is in that moment. Like, does this conversation need to happen with another adult present? Because it may become that in the middle of the conversation, it's too much for you, right? Who is that trusted adult? Is this done in some kind of family therapy? Is there a friend that has the kind of relationship that can be there as your support? Even if you're just saying, you know, very basic information that's sort of like, I'm having a lot of emotions because something, you know, traumatic in my past happened around this age. Like, do you need to have someone with you? Because that is going to open all these other things. In general, when talking to kids, I think it is best to share what's necessary and no more, and let them come to you with other questions. But that means that you need to be prepared and know what those boundaries are. There may be parts of your story that you decide you never are going to share with them. And I think that's okay. Like, but you need to assess what that is and put those boundaries in place with yourself before you open the door. I think the other thing is to understand that once you have this conversation, it's not going to be over. This is a door that will forever be open. And I think there are very good things about that, but there are also very bad things about that. And so taking stock of this in totality and figuring out, and I think this should be done with a therapist, when this conversation is healthy for you so that you can continue to be their mother as you have this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a complex one, and I am so not a therapist, and, you know, so frankly, I don't know what I'm talking about, for real. I'm curious the degree to which, like, are you able to have a conversation with, especially your older kid, about sexual assault without talking about your sexual assault? Because, like, you know, talking to your kids about everything from, like, the names of your body parts, which is, like, the conversation we have at our house, to, like, you know, saying no, like, those types of things. Like, are you able to do that? And is there a way in which, like, that is in a kind of, like, safety way, like, without opening the door to your own personal experience? And if the answer is yes to that, like, does that help at all? Or is like the whole territory of sexual abuse, the whole topic, is it just in so fraught that talking about it at all right now, you're kind of stuck on? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I agree with both of you in terms of what Elizabeth said, that you should talk to your therapist about a plan for just how and what you're going to disclose to your children, about what took place and what sort of language you're going to use to talk to them. And as Zach said, I think both your children are old enough to have a conversation about bodily autonomy and, you know, good touch, bad touch, and making sure that they know that if anybody tries anything inappropriate with them, that they're to report it right away. In the meantime, I suppose, before you kind of figure things out with your therapist, if you're having one of those moments where you're crying, or, you know, you're having a hard time staying engaged when they're trying to talk to you, you know, let your kids know mommy's having a hard time. And that sometimes mommies have bad days too, that you're dealing with something upsetting and it has nothing to do with them. You're just dealing with some sad feelings and you're sorry that, you know, it's impacting your mood and how you're interacting with them, but that you love them very much, that they haven't done anything wrong, and that you're working to do your best to get through this.
I think that's such good advice, like almost dealing with what I would call these, like, the symptoms of this trigger can be dealt with almost separately, in the sense of, like, giving yourself that grace. And I really do think children accept a lot when you say something like, you know, I have had a lot of life before you, and some of that is what is causing this, and it has nothing to do with you. And like Jamila said, just saying, I love you and I'm here for you. What else can you do, though, like, are there other people you can, you know, be plussing up your kids' time with to pick up some of that, let's say, quote unquote, like slack that you feel like you're leaving behind? Because it's okay that you can't fill that right now. And I think what you can do is just make sure that there are things in place so that they feel loved, you know, and appreciated, and giving them the opportunity to say, like, I feel angry because you're not here for us. It's like, I completely get that. I think expressing your understanding that what you're processing also has outcomes for them. And not that you need to take that onto you, but to say, yes, I am unable right now to be, you know, as present as I was. And I do feel bad about that. But how can I help you in that other way? Is there a, you know, I don't know, another trusted adult? Are there friends that you can try to have some extra time with? Like, what are you capable of doing? Do you need to have them in camp, or can you get some kind of other caregiver? Like, I think there are these other community resources out there so that you don't feel like you have to be, you know, the person you are when you're not triggered and the person you are when you are triggered. Like, both of those are valid experiences and you're going to have to go through that. So how do you meet these other needs a different way so that you're not carrying the burden? Because what I read from this is, like, not only is you know, this person going through the PTSD, but now they also feel bad as a mother as a result of that. And I think, like, none of us want you to feel that way.
Do either of you know of any good, have you used any books to introduce these topics or themes to your kids of sexual assault?
So I'd say we've mostly stuck with, like, books talking about the body. Yeah. And have talked about this idea of, like, tricky adults or tricky people. A lot of talk about secret keeping, like, that secret keeping is not something we do. What's the difference between a secret and a surprise? To always be thinking about, like, why would an adult be asking you to keep something from us, right? Is it because grandma's planning a party and she doesn't want to ruin the surprise? Or is it because if you told me, someone would be in trouble or someone would feel bad? And I think trying to re-up that, like, we will never be mad, and then living this out, right? We will never be mad if you tell us something that feels really uncomfortable, being able to kind of keep your anger at bay. So I think we've done that more than, like, a book that specifically addressed this. Although I'm sure they're out there.
Rain recommends a book called A Kid's Book About Sexual Abuse. It says some of the most difficult things to talk about are also the most important. Sexual abuse happens more often than people realize, but most kids don't learn about it until after it happens. This book will help give them the language to understand what sexual abuse is and start a conversation around owning their bodies and trusting their instincts. We can link to that in the show notes.
I have found on the organization called Creating a Family, which appears to be like a foster and adoption, but they have an entire list of books, children's books about abuse and trauma. I haven't checked any of these are, but titles are things like, Do You Have a Secret? A Terrible Thing Happened. Once I Was Very, Very Scared. So they're definitely out there. Of course, again, this is something, like, I think you should preview, or a trusted adult should preview, or your therapist should preview.
Yeah.
Well, Hiding My Story, thank you so much for writing to us, and we're wishing you all the best. If any other listeners have advice for her, you can always share it at momanddad@slate.com or by leaving us a voicemail at 646-357-9318. And if you or someone you know needs help, the National Sexual Assault Hotline is reachable 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call 1-800-656-4673 to talk to someone, or chat online and access other resources at rainrain.org. We'll also have a link in the show notes as well. That is our show for the week. Please subscribe, leave a rating and review, and tell your friends. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson, Mara Curry, and Tori Dominguez. Shasha Leonard is the voice of our listeners. Alicia Montgomery is VP of Slate Audio. For Zach Rosen and Elizabeth Newcamp, I'm Jamila Lemieux. Thanks for listening.